And then we had $1 million in 2020. It was like a first time, and it was more money than my brain could even handle understanding. It was almost like before I would have always dreamt for that and felt like, when I dreamt ahead and I was like, oh, if I make $1 million, I'll be safe. I finally hit it and I felt so unsafe that I started having panic attacks. And I ended up having to like kick up more sessions with my life coach than less because my brain could not conceive or handle what it would be like to feel safe. It was always looking for danger, how to keep growing it, not to have imposter syndrome. So I think no matter where we're at, and I'm a really good example of this, like I grew up in like trauma and scarcity, and I've had to actively work on it. So I think I can relate to a lot of people with that fear of growth.
Welcome to She Empowers, the podcast. This is your host, Dr. Kayla Lucas. I'm a mom of two, a family-focused chiropractor, a trailblazing entrepreneur, and a holistic mindset queen. I am on a mission to empower women to lead themselves and their families to greater health and wellness in their personal lives and businesses. Each week, I'm sharing inspiring content that will give you the tools to navigate your own wellness journey, grow your businesses, expand your mind, and take care of the ones you love. This is your space to feel supported, inspired, and empowered. Let's get into it. Hello, beautiful. Welcome back to another episode of She Empowers the podcast. I'm so stoked to be bringing you today's guest. Where are my product-based business owners at? We have the product boss herself, Jacqueline Snyder. She's an apparel and accessories expert with over 14 years of consulting startups and a BFA in fashion design. She owns Designer Consulting Co-op and has helped over 1,000 startup companies grow their businesses. In addition to that, she's also launched her own product-based multi-six-figure business called Cuffs Couture, which she's selling worldwide and dressing all the celebrities. I can't wait to hear more about that. Most recently, Jacqueline acts as the face and the driving force behind the Apple Top 10 Marketing podcast and a small business coaching platform called The Product Boss. So if you've not ever heard of her, go look her up on Instagram right now. She shares so much good information about product-based businesses. So I can't wait to unpack her brain. We're going to talk about digital marketing. We're going to talk about all the different goes and nos of product-based business. So welcome, Jacqueline, to the show. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So I know that you've been in this industry for quite some time, but just I would love for you to share with the audience, who you are and how you got to where you are today and how you've sort of built an empire around the product boss.
Yeah. So, Designer Consulting Co-op, I started that when I was 26 years old. So I'm a fashion designer by trade. I worked for bigger companies. I went to school to be a fashion designer. And, entrepreneurship was built into the blood of my family. I'm first generation American. When my family got here, they had to figure out how do we start from nothing, right? And so it was really very much something that I grew up around. And I remember when I was in between jobs and I was still interviewing at big companies, my mom was like, well, think about doing something on your own, like you have this opportunity, this gap in time. And I was helping, it was kind of a collaboration with someone else when I was looking for another job, I needed to make money. And so we're like, maybe we should just help other people. So that's where Designer Consulting Co-op started, where I was a designer and people had ideas. So they came and they were like, I want to start a swimwear line. I want to start an activewear line. I want to start a kids line. And they'd come to me and I'd help them conceive the concept. I would actually physically design it, source all of the materials, get the products made, help them produce, and then sell. And that's actually, the thing that I've done forever. I never went back to working for someone. It did incredibly well. And while I was doing that, I had, creatives always have ideas, whether you're service or product. Because I was a service company and I am a service company still, right? I'm a digital marketer. I sell courses online, and we can always dig into that if that's helpful to your listeners. But I came from the product side. And so I was like, I should start one of my own. And that's when I came up with the idea of Cuffs Couture, which you mentioned, which is a wearable wrist wallet. Now it is closed. I shut it down actually years ago, but it was this idea of like, if I could help other people bring their ideas to life, what about mine? And I did that. We dressed Kim Kardashian, Carrie Underwood, like tons of celebrities. I sold worldwide, but I basically went through the steps that I teach my students today, right? I figured out like my own cold hard cash, my savings is the thing that I started this idea with. And then how was I going to get people to discover my product? How was I going to sell? We didn't really have social media the way we have it now. How are we going to reach people? And so I think so much of that experience and what I love to tell people is you know, if I want to go to Taylor Swift's eras, right? Like we don't know the era or the season that we're in. And so every single choice that I've made over the last 20 years of me in as an entrepreneur has led to something different, something that was unexpected. And so Cuffs happened. And then as I was shutting down Cuffs, that's actually how the Product Boss started, because the Product Boss originated with my original co-founder. We became friends because we were talking about product and I wanted to liquidate Cuffs and she was on Amazon. And there was this whole back end story to realizing there was no resource out there for product-based businesses. Everything was really specific. It was like Amazon or e-commerce or Etsy. And we both had these combined experiences of selling our products in lots of different ways. And so that was really how we conceived it. I recently bought her out. So now it's solo me here, but it really led into every experience that I've ever had over the last, you know, two decades has led to what we put into the Product Boss, which is helping anybody with a physical product, someone who makes something and sells it, but that I believe that there are many paths to profit. So, you know, through courses and the podcast and masterminds and all the things, we just ensure that everybody knows how to create options and opportunities for themselves to grow a successful small business based on what they want for their lives.
I love how you really just touched on the evolution of how you just kind of kept taking one foot, one action, one step in front of the other. And that kind of led to a different evolution. I think that a lot of the time we can get a little bit scared, almost in a stagnation way, of actually bringing forth our ideas, bringing forth our products, our businesses, and the things that we actually want to create. And then, but you're kind of saying the opposite of that. You're like, no, I've had to take so many steps forward just to actually get to where you are today.
Yeah.
You highlighted something about like service-based and product-based and how you started out at service-based and now you're product-based. So what are some unique components of product-based businesses that are different from a service-based business?
Yeah. So I've always been service, but I've been product as well, right? And I've coached product. So the idea here is that the reason why the podcast, I think, has been so successful and when we saw this gap in the market was product-based businesses have to sit on inventory and raw goods. They have to deal with shipping. So there's a lot of money out before they ever actually make a sale. I remember one of my one-on-one clients came and I was in, you know, it was through the sales process. And he was like, wait, so you're telling me I have to spend, and this is more than other people, but this is the type of company he was trying to build. He's like, you're telling me I have to spend $300,000 before I even know if this is like a good idea. And I was like, yeah, you know, he had this huge idea for this big company. And, you know, service people, we can throw up a podcast, we can go on Instagram, we could just start speaking into the internet and say, hey, you know, contact me and I could do a one-on-one call with you or join my mastermind. Product people, there's this whole process of ideation, but then they ideate the idea, but then they also have to make something. And so then we have to decide, what is the production process? Are we sourcing? Are we manufacturing? Is it handmade and all the raw goods that go into it? And then there's the storage of that product, right? We have to sell the physical product and we have to ship it out to our customers. And then we've got shipping costs. So there's a lot that goes into, I love it. I've helped so many people around the world grow beautiful businesses because there's people who have, we all have, there's people with ideas and there's people who have passions or creative ideas or inventions that they want to create or they want to make. Like we have artists and things like that, but they want to sell their product and make money back for it. So I think that's probably one of the biggest differences. And then also when we think about marketing, it's also very different when it comes to product.
So can we touch on that? You know, is there a way to test the market before, let's say, going all in to ensure that your product is something that your ideal customer and how you define your ideal customer will actually use and want?
Yeah, great question. So I'm really excited about this new program that we have coming out that's going to dig really into this stage. I have these like pillars. And one of the things is that we have really great ideas, but a lot of times we create these ideas in a vacuum. We're in our own house, we're in our own mind, and we're like, oh, this is a great idea. But there's one part of one is doing market research. So looking out there in the world, I tell my listeners, I'm like, leave your house. We can leave our house again, go shopping. It's part of, you know, it's R&D. And so the idea is like one, it's just paying attention. It's paying attention to the market and the trends. I've got a knockoff Stanley quencher right now that I'm drinking out of. And Stanley has been, when they created this product, it was in 2017 that they created it. And then now, and they went from I think they're $70 to $90 million a year in revenue as a 110-year-old company. And since the quencher has hit big, they're at $750 million.
Wow.
Right. And so the idea here is like, there are a lot of people who have created knockoffs that were paying attention to people wanting these in lots of colors. So one, it's market research. understanding the greatest need, want, desire, or problem you can solve for a customer, and it's not broad. So a lot of times we think, well, I can make everything for everybody and somebody's going to buy something. It's this concept of like throwing spaghetti at the wall. But really it's like, who is our target customer? Who is she typically? Because women make the majority of the buying decisions, but it could be them. It could be him, you know, it could be, but like, or it could be the owner's pet, and figuring what is a need, want, or desire, or a problem that my product can solve. And, you know, there are other ways that we can, you know, you can dig into getting feedback. A lot of times people start with family and friends. They're not always the best because they're going to be like, good job. Like, yeah, this is great. You know, it's like not always
received
the best
well.
Feedback. Yeah. Or, yeah. Or, well, either people are like, oh, you know, they're not super supportive of entrepreneurship, or they're going to be like your cheerleaders. So then it's really starting to think, who is my ideal customer? How can I get my product in front of them? So is it a Facebook group? Is it your friends that are a mom group? You know, who else can we pull in to start really kind of identifying if the product idea is great? But I will say one of the core things that we teach, it goes back to going deep and not wide, is figuring out like what your hero product is. And eventually your hero product can become your bestseller. So a lot of times I see people making all the things and thinking somebody's going to want something that I'm selling. But if you're coming up with an idea or you're already in business and selling product, do you have a hero product, the thing that like everybody knows about? Or do you have a core section of products? Like if you're a skincare company, maybe there's like a regimen that people have. And then eventually, as you start to push these out and market those to your customers, you'll also start to identify your best sellers, which are the thing that will actually do exactly what it did for Stanley, right? They're a 100-year-old company. They got really good at this quencher and they came out with it a whole bunch of colors and they kept selling and selling and selling to $750 million. And that they didn't get distracted early on in the game.
Okay. So you're kind of saying that if you have a product-based business, essentially take inventory and data on what your bestseller is and then kind of run with that versus creating more product, more product, more product.
Yeah, that's like a core tenet at the Product Boss is like, again, staying focused and selling more of what works and then doing variations of it versus thinking, oh, now that this is selling, I should add something else on.
Well, and you even touched on earlier how before when you started this, like we didn't have as much social media availability or online presence. One thing that I've really noticed trending on Instagram is just digital marketing of products that people are using in order to advance sales, either through Amazon or through their storefront or whatever that looks like. What are the best practices for digital marketing for product-based business owners? Like not only just like when times are good, but when times are turbulent.
Yeah. You know, we just came out of the holiday season. It feels like it's always we're coming out of it or we're going into it because that's the busiest time of the year for holiday. For product-based people is the holidays. I have proof through my students and through our program, which is Multi-Stream Machine, for example, that and what I teach people is they can get more eyes on their business and make more sales, and they can actually do it without social media. So I've shown them proof. Like I have a student that has 1,500 followers, and her company makes $25 million a year.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. I have another client that has 24 followers. She started last year, and in the first 90 days using like what we teach in our program, made $31,500 off of one product. And then by the end of the year, made $200,000 and left her full-time job and replaced her salary better than she could have ever done, right? And these are both are without social. So if you like social media, if you understand content creation, if it's something that aligns with you, then 100%, like we have someone else, she sells adult coloring books and she blew up on TikTok, doesn't have the most followers, but she has pieces, things that go viral. Also, she had like, I don't know, like a $200,000 month through TikTok shops selling adult coloring books. Okay. This is not, we're not selling gold bars, right? So we can use social, we don't have to use social, but we have to have a marketing plan. So we have to have a way of that we're going to attract customers to us, how we're going to pull them in and how we're going to push content out to people. And then the way that I teach it inside of our programs is like, we can get more eyes by selling on other sales channels and other platforms where customers are already built in, like Amazon, in-person markets, wholesale, being on other people's shelves. Or we can also sell direct to consumer through our own website, but we will also need to have a virtual presence. I think everyone needs a virtual presence. So we all do need social at some point, but it doesn't have to be our main channel to bring people in.
Well, and I think a lot of people get really conflicted and or like intimidated by social media, by digital marketing, and build your email list and do all of these things, right? Have you noted that maybe email list is maybe more of importance than actually showing up on social media?
Yes. So yes. It's the hardest thing, especially with, 50% of our listeners tend to come off of Etsy, for example, or they come from this maker's mindset. So Etsy does not allow for you to grow your email list because they want you to spend money on ads, and they want everyone to stay on that platform. They do not want people to leave because they make money off of that. But you're building on borrowed land. This, when we're on other people's platforms, not the sales channels I'm talking about or like wholesale, but when you're using Etsy specifically and they're bringing you the customer, and they also can shut down your listing, they can shut down your store for people just complaining about something. And I have so many people who this has happened to. Your company's dead in the water. Mm-hmm. So 100%, and this is something we also integrate into our programs, is building your email list no matter where you are, no matter what effort you're doing. So many times I think people use social media and they want to convert to sales. They're like, buy this, buy that, or they don't say buy anything at all. But what if you started to think about these places, these points of contact that you have with your customers, wherever they are, and asking them to join your email list? What do you own? You own your email list as an asset in your business, and you own your own website as an asset in your business. Everything else can go away potentially, right? Mm-hmm. But that's why I really believe in diversification and diversification of sales channels and diversification of marketing channels. Because if we've learned anything in the last 4 years, is don't have all your eggs in one basket, right? So I think email list is really important. I think some sort of online presence is really important. And then you can decide if, like, I just coached someone a couple days ago, actually. She's just not a social media person. She doesn't understand the platform. She doesn't understand even like imagery and like building a brand. It's just not, unless she hires someone. So I actually coached her into wholesale, because she's got a beautiful product and she knows all that. And so what would it look like if, instead of her worrying about even right now building an email list, but rather making really strong connections with buyers at retail stores and then just making $1,000 sales to them at a time, that's just an easier way of doing business based on her way of being. But then she will still get new customers to discover her, because they will discover her on the shelves of Anthropologie, for example.
Two thoughts like just popped into my head as you're like describing this. So email marketing being a really good way to build your audience, your customer base. Like, one thing I want to ask is like, do you have a philosophy around discounting sales for product-based businesses? Like, is there a reason why getting a newsletter fed to you of like, hey, your first purchase 10% off or 15% off, like, is that a valuable tactic? And then you also chatted about not having all of your eggs in one basket. So how can product-based businesses essentially diversify where they are actually putting their sales funnels or how they're receiving customers purchasing their products?
Yeah. So that's, and when you're mentioning all this, I love it, because this is the biggest difference between service-based and product. Yeah. We don't typically call it a funnel, because yes, you can have a funnel, what we know a funnel to be, right? Where we capture people and then we bring them in to convert them into the sale. But it's a very different process than it is for digital marketers or people online. So I'll tackle the first question. So it depends, right? Like, it depends on the business that they're doing. So for example, the adult coloring book, she could do an opt-in where it's like, get a free coloring book page. She could do that if that was a big enough need, want, or desire of the customer. But typically the biggest difference between service and product is product will do that offer of 10, 15% off your first order. So we all know this, that if we've gone on an e-commerce site of any sort, there's a pop-up that's like, join the list and get 15% off your first order. And, you know, whether it's one step or two step into text messaging, because in order to get somebody to try something new, they are going to want a discount to try something new, you know, or you'll think about when you can go try a sample of something and you're like, oh, this tastes really good, I'll buy more of that. So yes, when we're online, they don't have the experience of being physically with the products. We want to make them an offer to test and try like our business. So that is the first part. It typically is more of a discount than an opt-in that we all know on the service side of the world.
Right.
And that's, I will say, the best way to grow your list. And then there's a whole back end to help them with that.
Having your eggs all in one basket, like I'm in a background of a service-based business. I'm a chiropractor, so people buy the service of chiropractic. I don't have to sell a product. I don't have to hold inventory. But in regards to even just the last 4 years and navigating how to have consistent buyers and continue to propel your business forward, have you noted that, like you said, not having your eggs all in one basket? So how can product-based businesses diversify that for themselves?
Yeah. So usually what we say is you have your one main sales channel, whatever that is. So wherever in the journey of entrepreneurship, people find us at the Product Boss, they either, a lot of them already have a product and they're trying to sell it in some sort of way. They'll either, think I'm going to build a website and try and sell on Instagram. They might be doing in-person market. So like art shows, farmers market, different things like that. A lot of people go on to Etsy because it's a platform that feels pretty accessible. And those would probably be the three of small businesses entering this world. I don't ever want anyone to turn off the one that's working. I want them to optimize it and make it work for them. And then the whole concept inside of our program, Multi-Stream Machine, for example, is sales channels or platforms that don't necessarily have gatekeepers. So Amazon is one that we love, right? I've seen people do amazing business on Amazon by getting listed on there. They can reach way more people than they could on their own. We talk about wholesale. That's a sales channel. So, for example, I had a woman that she could only ever sell her stuff on discount through influencers on Instagram. It was like little girl dresses. And when she took on wholesale, within like a week of joining our program and taking on wholesale, she got her first order, which was $1,000. And then that store reordered from her within the next 30 days, double. So another $2,000. Now she's in over 800 retailers
Wow.
and has surpassed like, she's like a multi-million dollar company, left her full-time job, raised her babies, but stayed focused because she was making tutus when she joined and t-shirts and all this stuff, but her bestseller, her hero product were these twirl dresses. And so she just made more variations of that dress and then got it into a retail shop. So retail, in person, Amazon, your own e-commerce site. And then thinking about other people's platforms. So there are other ways of selling on other types of like sales channels or platforms, or using, like you said, influencers and affiliates potentially as well. But it's diversification. Oh, and some social media shops. It's the idea of like, they don't all need to be the strongest, but we want to vary where our income sources come in and get better as we go in case something happens. I also have another student that has a $4 million Etsy shop. So it's like 4 million eggs on Etsy. So when she came and joined the program, she wanted to grow an email list and she wanted to build a website that then she could, if something happened with Etsy, if they took her shop down, which they can, she would have a place for people to keep buying from her.
So are many of your clients, like I know that you've talked a little bit about your coaching program inside of this episode. So are many of your clients mostly product-based businesses? Are they service-based entrepreneurs who are wanting to add products to their business model? Is it good to have a little bit of both? And how do you determine what is the best way to sort of coach product-based businesses? Like, do they have all very similar challenges? Do they have very different challenges? I would just love to hear a little bit more about what you're doing day to day on the service-based side.
Well, we don't coach service people. So a lot of times my friends will ask me to come on, to a podcast, or when I went to Podcast Movement and spoke there, it wasn't product people, they were podcasters. So I spoke to podcasters about adding products if they chose to, and like the different ways you could add products to your service-based company. And that is sort of like a sub-tier. But the people who typically come into our orbit and stay are people that have an idea to create a product-based business, like a physical good. And they could be makers, they could be artists, they could be food companies, could have an idea and manufacture. They're brick and mortar retailers, and they want to know, how do I keep growing my business?
Yeah, I was sharing with you before we hit play was just like that post that you had shared earlier. I think it was like the speaker last week of if you're worried about the cost of startup, think about the cost of staying exactly where you are. So is a lot of the people you coach a lot of mindset stuff of having to like get over the hurdles of belief and actually moving forward and progressing in this model of business?
It's literally always mindset, no matter what business we're in, whether we're service, like I was an agency, then a digital marketer, I had my own product business. Wherever I am, it's always mindset. I remember when I hit my first $1 million, like I grew up with a lot of scarcity and literally believing all my money would run out and I'd end up on the streets. Like, this is an actual fear that I had to work a lot on. And then we had $1 million in 2020. It was like a first time, and it was more money than my brain could even handle understanding. It was almost like before I would have always dreamt for that and felt like, you know, when I dreamt ahead and I was like, oh, if I make $1 million, I'll be safe. I finally hit it and I felt so unsafe that I started having panic attacks. And I ended up having to like kick up more sessions with my life coach than less, because my brain could not conceive or handle what it would be like to feel safe. It was always looking for danger, how to keep growing it, not to have imposter syndrome. So I think no matter where we're at, and I'm a really good example of this, like I grew up in like trauma and scarcity, and I've had to actively work on it. So I think I can relate to a lot of people with that fear of growth. One thing, it was a bracelet I wore as I was growing up, was like, what would you attempt to do if you knew you could not fail? Because I always thought I was going to fail, even though I've been successful, knock on wood. So yes to mindset. The other thing that I'm realizing, and I think this would be really impactful for your audience as well, is, you know, especially as women, we talk about the glass ceiling, right? Oh, we need to break the glass ceiling. We need to smash through the glass ceiling. And I always joke, I'm like, well, there's Oprah's glass ceiling, right? Yeah. Like, there's like
this woman on earth.
Yeah. There's like the ultimate woman's glass ceiling. And again, like the richest people on earth are still men. So there's like the Oprah glass ceiling. And then there's a glass ceiling that's set for us if we work for corporate jobs, right? Like historically, like what we're paid versus what our male counterparts are paid. So there's those glass ceilings. But the craziest thing is actually the glass ceiling that we have for ourselves.
Yeah.
And it is so much lower. It's like a drop ceiling, you know, like we set it so low. And typically that's based on our experience or our exposure. So it's really important as women to surround ourselves or to listen to podcasts or to go to, you know, to be in a mastermind or find facilitators or be around people doing things that are bigger and scarier, because we don't even know what we don't know. I always joke, I'm like, men have the golf course. Like, where do we chat private planes? But that was literally a conversation I had in a mastermind that I was a part of with a woman that was making 8 figures in her business. That I would have never even had a conversation about the tax write-off benefits of a private plane, which to me sounded bonkers. Mm-hmm. But where is that conversation coming from? So I say this because I want all of us to realize, like, we've set our own glass ceiling. It's lower than the one that's even set for us outside. And it's, I don't want to tell us to break through it, right? I don't want to tell us to smash it. I actually just want us to think of this idea of like lifting the lid. Mm-hmm. So let's just lift the lid and then, you know, look up at the blue sky. And I want us to just feel like, okay, anything is possible. We don't know what it is yet. And we don't need to know exactly what it is, but I just need us to remove that kind of like lid we're keeping on ourselves so that we can start to explore and think and say, what if, right? Like, what if, and then we just start to go down these, we ask ourselves like, what if, well, what if that happened? Okay. What if that happened? And then it just starts to create more opportunity and possibility for us, that curiosity of life versus like, nope, never going to happen. Or, you know, the people around us saying like, how could you even think that big? You know, how could you, it's like, you need to surround yourself with people that are going to allow for you and support you in thinking bigger.
Hey friends, what's up? Real quick here. I need to ask you a favor. Over the last year, I put my blood, sweat, and tears into this podcast, and I have a team behind the scenes who puts their blood, sweat, and tears into this podcast to offer you free content that helps you live your most empowered life. We do not do any sort of advertising whatsoever. So what I'm asking is for you to leave a 5-star review of the show, either on Apple or Spotify or whatever platform that you are currently using to listen to the episodes. This helps the grand mission of She Empowers to build community, to reach more ears, and ultimately help us grow this podcast. It takes 1 minute of your time, and it is the best act of generosity that you can give back to the show. Thank you so much for continuing to tune in, and thank you so much for helping us reach our mission in reaching more ears, more people, and more empowered and inspired lives. Now back to the show. I love the analogy that you're using of just lifting the lid. Like, I mean, it's so true. Where are these conversations happening? Why aren't they happening more? I can really relate to you on that level of like growing up with a lot of scarcity, having to unlearn very strong patterns of lack and wanting to actually call in more. I was listening to a podcast episode with Ed Mylett, and he said the biggest dream thought that you have that's as far as you're going to go. So I think that actually does surround the mindset of money or the mindset of business and what we are capable of, because it hasn't potentially been modeled to us in past generations, or we're kind of modeling it for ourselves. And having conversations like these just really normalize how we can use our own unique gifts and move them through ourselves, but also just like step out of that fear and into something that might be actually even more beautiful and ginormous and exciting than what we can anticipate in the fear aspect. So I really appreciate you touching on that.
I just posted on Instagram. I wanted to read it to you because it's still up there. It's like a repost from someone, but it's someone who said women weren't even allowed to have a credit card in their own name until 1974. So it's actually super empowering of me to have 3 maxed out credit cards. I thought it was so funny, right? But it was like, it's like, oh no, this is empowering. But it is this idea of like our generationally, and like my family, my mom is from London. I mean, my Moroccan side, like my grandmother was married and having children at 13. So like, in one generation, how quickly we can change, but to see people modeling it, depending on what our lived experiences and where we come from. My grandma shared a passport with my grandpa. She didn't have her own passport. Right. You know, she looks at me now, she's like, are you still working? I'm like, yes, grandma. Like this is what I do, you know, like someone else is going to cook the dinner for my kids. It's not going to be me. So I think we do need to expose ourselves. And the more women can start to speak realistically, I hate when like people aren't realistic with showing their resources when they do have resources, how else they're taking care of their houses or their families, like what they're doing. And the more realistic we can be with it, the more we can be like, oh no, she's not, you know, perfect mom, running a huge business. Like, let's talk about Jessica Alba with The Honest Company having a $1 billion business.
Yeah.
She's not balancing doing TikToks with her kids and running this company and doesn't have support both at home and the business side. So it's just making sure that we're all kind of cued into reality. But like, I love what Ed said was like this idea of the biggest dream is where you're going to hit. It's that same concept. So we can just start to go, what if, and expose ourselves to it, not like reality show exposure, but real women in business exposure. We can start to just play with the idea of what's possible.
Well, I think it just normalizes the conversation of being a mompreneur and all of the components that actually come with that. I have a 6 and a 4-year-old, and I have my own business and the podcast and all these other things that you're working towards. And it's like, no, I'm not doing all this shit by myself, because how could I? It's actually impossible to even conceive that I would be doing this all by myself. How have you had to navigate balancing being a CEO and a mom, and how you prioritize, you know, your mental, your spiritual, your wellness? Like, how do you do it?
Yeah. You know, I like to use the word blend. I don't like balance, because balance feels like I'm going to fall off and fail. And I don't like juggling, because I feel like I'm going to drop something. Something's going to be in the air and nothing's going to get caught. So blend is sort of my smoothie in the morning. It's this concept of, you know, sometimes I want extra banana. Sometimes I want to add in some peanut butter, right? Like we're going to change that blend, that recipe every single day. And I think as mothers, especially in running businesses, each day is going to look different. Like, we're in LA now, so we don't get snow days as we did on the East Coast, but we actually had a rain day where it was like, watch out, the storm is coming, that like school might be shut down. My kids are praying for it, but it's not going to happen here. It takes a lot in California to shut a school down. But, you know, it's like, but if it was a snow day and my kids were all of a sudden home, like, well, what do I do? I've got meetings. I've got a podcast recording, right? It's like all hell is going to break loose. And so it's being great, having grace for ourselves, but knowing that no day is going to look the same. Some days we might be more into being able to have self-care and getting a lot of sleep. You're in it right now with a 4 and 6-year-old. You know, my kids, when they finally hit like 7, 8 and older, they were more independent. I didn't need to like watch everything that they did and keep them busy all the time. And it goes so fast. So I will say that when I first started, I was bi-coastal. I had babies. My husband's an actor, so he was working on the East Coast. I still had my offices for my consulting company in LA, and I was traveling back and forth. My son and I went on a plane 25 times by ourselves in his first year of life.
Oh my gosh.
I really knew how to do things on planes. Like,
you know, I know how to pack.
I knew how to pack. I knew where to change him. I knew what flights to, what airlines to take that had changing tables. I like became really good at baby travel. When we eventually did go full-time to the East Coast, and I was working at home, but I had babies, it was like, what could I outsource? What could I afford to outsource? One of the biggest things for me was my laundry. And New York was so cool because New York was the first place that like you could get coffee delivered and breakfast delivered and cookies delivered in the middle of the night. That was like the world of New York, even, way before the pandemic. So we ended up figuring out when we lived in New York City, we had a doorman and you could drop stuff off at the doorman and he could get your laundry done. When I eventually moved to New Jersey, it was different, but we found a service that we'd put all our laundry in a bag. They'd come pick it up. We'd pay like, it wasn't that expensive. It was like $1 a pound or something. And they'd bring it back completely beautifully folded, better than I'd ever folded in my life, right? Because laundry was the bane of my existence. And just because I was working from home did not mean that I was in charge of laundry. Like, nobody wants to be in charge of laundry and nobody wants to be in charge of the dishes. Like, so it was like, what part could we outsource that was affordable to our family that would be able to be resourced more? When I had my second kid and I had a coach, Natalie Ekdahl of BizChicks, she was the first person that did teach me this concept of like, pay for the help you can afford. And because we can make more money working and we'll be able to afford this and we can grow our businesses way bigger than us worrying about this little stuff. So I actually put my daughter into preschool earlier than I put my son because we're by ourselves on the East Coast and I needed her to be somewhere so I could work. I remember crying the night before, like, oh, I'm a crappy mom. I'm putting her in early, like she should be home with me. And then she was like, peace out, mom. She walks right in. There was no transition. She loved it. So I think the idea here is like we have so many apps now post-pandemic. Like I don't do my grocery shopping anymore. Instacart does that. And if I need, my kids have a cold and it's late at night, I'm not running out to the grocery store or the drugstore. I'm getting Instacart to deliver it. I get my food delivered by DoorDash. So there's certain things that like I'm outsourcing as if I were to have a personal assistant. I'm paying a little bit more, but my time is better spent doing this. Then I think as you grow it, and I have a big team now, I have a personal assistant, but I wouldn't have been able to get to this point had I not had the mentality of like, what can I or outsource that I don't need to be doing?
I think it like you have to like give yourself permission to actually accept the help and not make it mean anything about the type of mother you are, the type of way you're raising your kids, all of the things that you would naturally think of in that regard. So I really appreciate you touching on that. I know that you speak pretty heavily on your platform about how you can do quick and affordable changes to make your business, your brand, kind of set yourself out from the competition. So I really want to pick your brain a little bit on that. If our product-based business owners are maybe stuck or just wanting to learn a little bit more about how they can kind of set themselves apart from their main competitors.
It goes back to a little bit of what we were talking about earlier, where we really want to identify our ideal customer and what a need, want, desire, or problem we can solve. So I just coached someone in skincare and she does clean, well, she called it vegan skincare. And I was like, well, vegan is fine, but it's not necessarily, it's solving a desire of someone to want to use a product with no animal byproducts in it or something like that. But it still doesn't solve her problem. And what is her problem? Is it anti-aging? Is it acne? Is it just, dry skin? Like, what is her actual problem? Because while it's vegan, that's not going to convince her to pull your stuff off the shelf. So we have to think too, like, what our customers' needs and desires are. So for her, it was like refiguring that part. So I was like, it's clean skincare, which is like a bonus. I only use clean skincare now, but then tell me what it is. And she's like, it's clean skincare that's anti-aging, that doesn't use harsh chemicals. And that's probably for the range of like mid-30s, mid-40s. Not needing like aggressive skincare so much so, but like they still want that. So we had to really hone in on that portion of it. The best way to stand out is to be known for something. It goes back to the concept of the bestseller or your hero product. We want to be known for something because when we're known for something, we are easily referable. So, another student of ours, Dallas Caramel Co., for example, she sells caramels. Buy caramels from her, right? She has like her different flavor caramels. She has, when I talk about this stuff, everyone's like, oh my God, I'm so hungry. I have to go buy it now. But caramel covered Oreos and like she took like caramel lollipops. If she started just making chocolate, like she's no longer the Dallas Caramel Co. So like you want to stick to the thing that you're known for and then you're easily referable. And people are like, oh my God, she's got the best chocolate covered Oreos with caramel all over it. So I think it's that idea of like, again, as creatives, and this is service or product, we get so distracted and we're super creative and we always have ideas. But the thing that's going to make you money, the thing that's going to make you stand apart is being known for something. And as soon as you do that, I challenge people. Can you make $1 million in your business, which I've seen people do, being known for something specific? And then you can come out with variations. I mean, you don't even have, it's not a million. Like, that's not the limit for it. But it's like, I challenge you to stay focused. I challenge you to get better at what you're doing. She's not making one kind of caramel and making $1 million, but she's sticking with the category of that. So let's just say she knows her twist off caramels are really good and like people really love, I don't know. Let's say she was adding fruits to like a flavor with a caramel. I don't know. It's not a good profile, but she might be like, okay, I'm going to try other fruit. Okay, cherry did really well. Now I'm going to try strawberry. But it's not doing that and then taking it somewhere else entirely. So it's coming out with variations of scents, of colors. If you're known for t-shirts, variations of t-shirts. If you're known for jewelry, but everyone's buying bracelets from you, make more bracelets. Don't think, oh, now I have to make toe rings and earrings. Make more of what they're buying.
Such good quality concepts, and things that I haven't had to think about, but I support a lot of local service-based or product-based businesses. And it's so true. Like, I'm just thinking of so many in my brain that I currently use. And I'm like, yes, they are known for this. So that's
Yeah.
really, really helpful. What do you want the audience to know about product-based businesses? Like, what is the one thing you can share with them that will either encourage, support them, or make a shift for them?
I think that, well, one, just as entrepreneurs in general in business, I want you all to know that, like, you're never done, right? I've closed down businesses. I've bought out a business. I've invested in businesses. I started the Product Boss at 37 with a 2-year-old and a 4.5-year-old. I thought at 37, I was done. I thought I was like, I'm a consultant. I own Designer Consulting Co-op. This is my life till I'm retire. But then I actually had the $1 million idea or the multi-million dollar idea in the Product Boss. My impact is greater. I'm in my mid-40s now and I'm like, holy moly, like how did this even happen? Right? Because I told you my story and I started as a designer. So I want us all to just realize like it's never done. It's never too late. You can close companies down. You can open new companies. You can buy out companies. You can sell your company. There's so many versions of all this, whether your product or service. And then, for product people, my biggest piece of advice is be profitable. Like, if you do not have the profit, it will tap out. You will not have the opportunity to grow. So we always want to make sure that you're profitable. And that's why I love the concept of, the bestseller, the hero product, being known for something. Because then if we're putting our money and our resources into product, we know we can sell and move, right? The sky's the limit. But if we're putting it in all this other stuff, our time and our money and like when you're in product, your money is literally sitting on a shelf in product that's not moving. It's not like a concept or an idea or a digital course where it's like, well, if they buy it or they don't, it's not taking up space on the shelf. So I want you to stay profitable. And the best way to do that is being focused because we get lower costs per goods. We get better prices to make stuff the more we make of the same product. And so that's if you want more money in your pocket, right? If you want to be profitable, if you want to live this life you imagine being an entrepreneur, it will take some focus and self-control, but you're not going to be disappointed when you start to see your bank account go higher than you've ever imagined.
Such good important concepts. And I think it goes back to what you said at the beginning of the episode of just like the evolution, putting one foot in front of the other and taking action in the ways that you can. I love how you keep coming back to stay focused, stay focused, stay focused. I think that it's such a good reminder, not only for like the audience, but just like globally. Like, I think we can get really distracted from so many things, and it can really derail us or deter us from what we actually started out with initially. So I really appreciate those concepts. How do people connect with you? How do they work with you? I would love for you to share how our audience can learn more from you, either on your social platforms or how to work with you.
Amazing. So you can follow us anywhere at The Product Boss. We hang out most on Instagram at this point. You can listen to The Product Boss podcast anywhere you listen. So Apple, Spotify, just, when you're done with the show, like pause and go follow The Product Boss show. And then I'd love to, gift something to your listeners. So if they head to theproductboss.com/Kayla, we'll use your name. Is that cool?
Yes.
Okay. Theproductboss.com/Kayla. I'd love to offer you over 300 resources as a guide for product-based people. So if you're thinking of getting started, if you already have a product, we have this amazing guide of all these, like, again, between service and product, these are very specific to product. And then hopefully that will help your audience as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We've learned such good things in like a short period of time. I'm always floored at how quickly these episodes go once we start getting into it. Thank you so much, Jacqueline, for agreeing to be on the podcast and sharing all of your wisdom with us today. I've had an amazing time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening the whole way through on She Empowers the podcast. Make sure to subscribe anywhere you are listening to podcasts. And if you happen to have iTunes, would you do me a favor and leave a 5-star review of the show so more women can learn about what we are doing over here? You can also copy this link and share it on your social media and tag me at sheempowers.co. That is the way we get these beautiful messages out to more and more souls around the world. Thank you so much for being a part of the She Empowers community. Until next time, go lead with love and joy.